Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today we open with a green scene report on how the Environmental Protection Agency is censoring important information for the public on climate science. Then we'll tell you about a bill moving through the state legislature to require lead testing of children in public schools. Plus, hear how California's Attorney General is responding to President Trump's executive order that seeks to open up California's coastline to offshore oil drilling. Next, we'll have a special treat for you, a story on how old-time fiddle playing and traditional music is making a comeback in our region. Julian's old-time fiddle and picking contest is coming up later this month, and you'll hear the winner of last year's open fiddling competition on today's show, plus some rollicking playing by a two-time national fiddle champion. On Crime Beat, hear about the shooting of a security guard outside a popular bar in La Mesa. In our bookshelf segment today, Raina Menashe interviews Molly Moon, author of Five Wishes, a captivating novel about a Honduran immigrant woman who seeks to escape poverty by emigrating to America, encountering the shadowy world of human trafficking on her journey. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about the top events this month in our inland region, from the debut of a ballet performance to America on Main Street in downtown El Cajon, a festival celebrating the diverse cultures in San Diego's East County. We'll also tell you about the reopening of historic cabins in Warner Springs, plus learn about a new Ready for Wildfires app from CAL FIRE, as well as efforts to improve safety on Highway 67. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
The last remaining oil derrick off California's coast is slated to be decommissioned, Public News Service reported earlier this month. But now a new executive order by President Donald Trump could result in offshore oil wells again pumping in the waters off California. That's disturbing news to the many Californians who remember the devastating Santa Barbara oil spill in 1969, the worst environmental disaster in U.S. history at the time. 3 million gallons of crude oil contaminated the ocean and beaches with thick black goo. Oil bubbled from the blown well and from cracks in the seabed, killing countless seabirds, seals, and other marine life. The toxic pollutants lingered for years. As a student at the University of California, Santa Barbara in the late 70s, everyone kept turpentine to clean tar off your feet if you walked at the beach. The odor of tar remained in the air years after the spill, and the finish on cars were pitted from tar granules in the air people had to breathe. That spill launched the environmental movement, leading to passage of the National Environmental Policy Act, signed into law by President Richard Nixon that same year, and the first Earth Day celebration in 1970. Today, the Santa Barbara spill of 1969 ranks as the third worst oil spill, surpassed by the Exxon Valdez off Alaska and the Deepwater Horizon blowout in the Gulf of Mexico. Globs of tar still wash ashore in Alaska decades after the Exxon Valdez tanker accident. In Gulf Coast states, tourism is still harmed by oil on beaches, and wildlife continues to die nearly 7 years after that disaster, which remains a ticking time bomb affecting people's health and the environment in many coastal communities. Yet another oil spill occurred off Santa Barbara in 2015, thankfully much smaller, but an ugly reminder of how swiftly our pristine beaches can become toxic waste dumps, harming both the environment and our tourism-based economy in California. President Trump's executive order opens up vast tracts of the Pacific, Arctic, and Atlantic oceans to new oil and gas drilling, ostensibly to make America energy secure and create greater prosperity for all Americans. He has asked the Department of Interior to study new oil and natural gas drilling off California's coast. Many political leaders in California have long sought a permanent ban on new offshore drilling. Trump's action unravels protections put in place by President Barack Obama, a plan that did not include any new drilling leases off our coast through at least 2022. Trump's order will face legal challenges. The first legal volley has been fired by California Attorney General Javier Becerra, who announced Friday, "We will vigorously oppose new drilling off the shores of our coast. California is leading the way in clean energy production and policies that preserve our state's pristine natural resources." California's Attorney General concludes, "Instead of taking us backwards, the federal government should work with us to advance the clean energy economy that's creating jobs, providing energy, and preserving California's natural beauty." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gene Carpenter.
This is John Fastier with an education report. It's rare for legislators in both parties to agree on anything these days. But a bill by San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher to require all school districts and colleges to test for lead in their water has passed the Assembly Education Committee with a unanimous bipartisan vote. Gonzalez-Fletcher states, "Lead exposure has real consequences, and it's unacceptable that children and teachers could be poisoned by drinking water from the water fountains at school." She adds, "Protecting the health of our kids is our first priority, and right now we don't know if they are truly being protected from lead in their drinking water. AB 746 will require all public pre-K-12 schools and community college, California State University, and University of California campuses to test their water for lead contamination. The bill does not apply to private schools. If elevated levels of lead are found, the bill requires the contaminated water sources be shut off immediately, and that staff and parents of students be notified of their potential exposure. Lead poisoning has been in the national news since the scandal in Flint, Michigan, but it's a nationwide problem that's also turning up here in San Diego County. In January, administrators at La Mirada Elementary School in the San Ysidro community of San Diego announced that the drinking water being served at the school tested positive for lead. Officials at the school were alerted to the potential contamination after contractors working on an unrelated issue noticed problems with the water and suggested school officials investigate. Following the announcement from La Mirada Elementary, two other schools, Emerson Bandini Elementary and the San Diego Cooperative Charter School 2, tested their water and discovered lead contamination as well. Many schools in East County are old enough to have lead water pipes and potentially lead in drinking water, but so far most have not been tested. Some, such as La Mesa Spring Valley School District, have announced plans to do testing, and in the meantime are providing bottled water to students and staff. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, there are no safe levels of lead. Long-term exposure to lead causes a number of health problems, including brain damage that affects learning and mental abilities. A national survey completed by Reuters News in 2016 found that California was home to 8 of the zip codes with highest lead contamination rates in the nation.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with the Green Scene Report. 7,000 people took to the streets in San Diego in a march for climate action on Saturday, April 29th. A week earlier, 15,000 people locally joined in a march for science. Both demonstrations were part of a national effort that drew millions of participants protesting the Trump administration's irrational anti-science stances. But far from heeding the concerns raised by millions of Americans, the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency has taken down its climate science website, The Washington Post reports. Gone is a webpage that explained what climate science is and why climate change matters. The old site stated, "It is extremely likely that human activities have been the dominant cause of that warming," citing the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change as a source. The site also advised the public on steps people can take to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, including how to calculate and reduce your carbon footprint. But now the old web address now steers visitors to a page that reads, "We are currently updating our website to reflect EPA's priorities under the leadership of President Trump and Administrator Pruitt. EPA Director Scott Pruitt has taken vast sums of money from the oil and coal industries. Pruitt says he disagrees that man's actions are primary contributors to climate change. As Attorney General for Oklahoma, an oil-producing state, Pruitt filed multiple lawsuits against the EPA seeking to overturn regulations, with briefs written in part by the fossil fuel industry. Pruitt has called for the U.S. to withdraw from their Paris Climate Accord that over 180 nations approved as a crucial plan to reverse climate change, which the world's most prominent climate scientists warn may soon be irreversible. The original EPA site on climate change, created before Trump took office, is still available in archives but is no longer visible to the public visiting the EPA's homepage. Censorship of the public's ability to view this science-based information has drawn sharp criticism from environmental leaders. David Doniger, director of the Climate and Clean Air Program for the National Resources Defense Council, tweeted, "Cleansing has begun. EPA website scrubbed of pages on so-called clean power plan. Now only alternative fact." The Environmental Protection Agency on Pruitt's watch seems headed toward sanctioning environmental protection, a subversion of its mission statement.
Each year, the town of Julian comes alive with the sounds of music, fiddle music, along with banjos, guitars, mandolins, and mountain dulcimers at the annual Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest. This year's event will be held on Saturday, May 20th at the Julian Town Hall. Plus on Friday night, May 19th, a Texas-style fiddle workshop will be led by two-time national grand fiddle champion Matthew Hartz. Recently, we're seeing a revival of interest in the art of fiddling and, more broadly, a renaissance in traditional music both regionally and nationally. Avery Ellisman is the district representative from the California State Old Time Fiddlers Association, which started 40 years ago. Locally, there are now around 60 members, on a mission to enhance appreciation for and involvement in old time fiddling. He says there's been a huge bump in sales of acoustic instruments nationally. According to the National Association of Music Manufacturers, and locally, two major nationally known musical instrument manufacturers, Taylor Guitar and Deering Banjo, are both adding staff here in East County. Baby boomers have the money and the time to rediscover the joys of just fiddling around, a pastime that evokes bygone days when life was simpler and the pace of living was slower, with time to listen, learn, and make some music of your own. Ellisman says of fiddling, "This is the music of the people," adding, "One person sits with and teaches another." Fiddling is most prevalent in rural areas, also a popular pastime to while away time during inclement weather. It's what people did for entertainment, kids, long before the advent of radio, TV, or the internet. Ellisman says, "I consider music to be one of the highest forms of human celebration, a celebration of life. Fiddle music is infectious in a very positive way. The world needs more of that." Though played on the same instrument as a violin, he adds, "Fiddle music calls you to dance." Julian's old-time fiddle and pickin' contest has its roots in a Julian banjo and fiddle competition that started over 60 years ago. For many years, it was run by the Julian Lions Club. But as the club's membership aged, interest in hosting competitions waned. The focus shifted to entertainment, and eventually the event dwindled. Ellisman runs the Julian Family Fiddle Camp each spring to teach fiddling skills to the next generation. So he asked the Lions to partner with his group and the State Old Time Fiddlers Association, but he says the Lions declined. So Ellisman turned to the community instead, asking the local Chamber of Commerce and local merchants to support a new and revitalized competition. The community agreed, and the competition has grown ever since. It's now a 2-day event, encouraging visitors to spend the night and help boost Julian's local economy. Ellisman calls Julian the jewel of East County, noting that the event draws people from across the West and as far away as Alaska. The first modern-day Julian Fiddlin' Pickin' contest was held in 2014. Fiddling refers to bowed instruments, while picking is for unbowed instruments such as the guitar, mandolin, banjo, and mountain dulcimer. Ellisman notes proudly, "We have kids from age 6 up to age 86, and they're playing together. It's a wonderful way to bridge the generations." Before, Julian's events were not traditional fiddle contests, but now they are. Each competitor must perform 3 elements, a hoedown, a waltz, and a piece of the musician's choice, such as a jig, a polka, or something else. Competitors can compete in age-based categories or in an open competition that any age can enter. The open competition is considered the premier event, with bragging rights for winners who beat all comers. At the 2016 competition, Ellisman's 16-year-old daughter, Shira Ellisman, competed for the first time in the open competition category. Early in the day, youngsters competed, and then in the afternoon, the open picking competition was held, followed by the open fiddling division. Announcer Dwight Warden explained that the history of fiddling goes back to the 1700s in America. Thomas Jefferson was an avid fiddler. Fiddling gained popularity again in the 1900s, thanks to Henry Ford, who liked fiddling so much he had fiddle competitions in all of his dealerships. But then fiddling events shifted to hokum and show fests, with people playing fiddles behind their heads or beating on instruments with broom straws, Warden recalls. More recently, the pendulum has shifted back to traditional fiddling styles that popularized the genre to begin with. In the 1950s, a major competition in Idaho put the focus back on musicianship, and the modern fiddle competition was born. All 3 pieces must be played within just 4 minutes, and no hokum is allowed. Shira Ellisman opened up the fiddling competition playing Sally Johnson for her hoedown entry, followed by Morning Star Waltz and Don't Let Your Gal Go Down. And here's a little bit of what this talented fiddler sounded like. The local teenager's teacher is Luke Price, a graduate of the Berklee School of Music, who is also a 2-time winner of the National Fiddle Championship. After Shira was finished, the announcer exclaimed, "She's got a future ahead of her!" The competition was stiff, with many other talented performers. After the contest, 3 of the fiddle judges also performed, Matthew Hartz and Luke Price, both multiple National Fiddle Competition winners, and Mabel Vogt from Idaho. Hartz told the crowd, "I'm excited to be here and come before a group that's so supportive. For us to carry this music and art form forward, we need your support," he added, as some in the crowd offered up donations or purchased CDs. Hartz performed a festival waltz and Shuck in the Bush to a wildly enthusiastic crowd. Here's a little excerpt of this dual national champion's performance. Finally, the long-awaited announcement of the award's winners came. First, the junior winners were announced, and then the open competitors. Tom Dillon of La Mesa, who plays with a bluegrass band, took first place in the open picking category. Then, the open fiddling winner was announced, and Shira Ellison claimed the top prize, beaming from ear to ear. Afterwards, her teacher, Luke Price, shared with us how he first got interested in music. "My dad started me on guitar and banjo at 3 years old," he said, in between signing autographs from his bands. "I started classical violin at age 8. It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He said, adding, "It took me 2 years before I started exploring the fiddle genre." He's come a long way since then, passing along the skills and joy of old-time fiddling to a new generation, including Shira Ellison, as she commences her own musical journey. You can learn fiddling and picking skills locally by signing up through julianfiddlecamp.com and listen to the talented local and national competitors at the next Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest by visiting sandiegofiddler.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery. You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Fisteer with a Crime Beat report. A security guard was injured by a gunshot wound to his thigh outside Jolton Joe's Bar in La Mesa around 1:35 a.m. on Sunday morning, April 30th. Several vehicles parked outside the bar were also struck. La Mesa police responded after 9/11 callers reported hearing gunfire outside the bar on La Mesa Boulevard. Upon arrival, police officers learned that there had been several fights at the establishment. During a fight outside, the suspect started shooting a handgun toward the front of the bar, striking the security guard, according to police. The suspect is described as a Hispanic man with a bald or shaved head. He was wearing a white polo shirt. The security guard was transported to a local hospital for treatment of his injury. La Mesa Police Department detectives are investigating the shooting and seek public help to identify the suspect. If you were a witness or have any information on the suspect or his whereabouts, please contact the La Mesa Police Department at 619-667-1400. You may also call Crime Stoppers Anonymous toll-free tip line 888-580-TIPS. Or www.sdcrimestoppers.com. You can remain anonymous and be eligible for a reward of up to $1,000 for information leading to an arrest in this case.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Molly Moon, author of the new novel, Five Wishes. My guest is also a German immigrant who empathizes with the plight of immigrants and refugees in our current political climate. Her novel takes us on just this kind of heart-rending journey from the shanty towns of Honduras to the anonymity of L.A. Five Wishes is her second novel. Welcome, Molly. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Let's start with your own experiences as an immigrant. Tell me your story. What was immigrating like for you, and how does it inspire your writing?
I first came to San Diego to attend San Diego State University when I had a Fulbright scholarship, And I studied Spanish as my major, which in Germany, I studied English and Spanish to become a translator. So Spanish was my main objective at San Diego State. And then when I graduated, I looked for a job, but I didn't have a lot of experience. And yet I was completely enthusiastic, thinking, everybody's waiting for me.
Of course.
I'm this great new person, you know, I graduated. And then I realized that people weren't waiting for me. And I had no resources. I had no family in the country. I had a friend that I stayed with. But my friend was also out of work, so we both had no resources. And so I ended up finding a job at a bakery in Irvine. So I moved from San Diego to Irvine, and that was my first job in California. And I rented a room, one room in a house, because I had no other money. Mm-hmm. I had no transportation, so that family gave me a bike that their children had used. It had no gears. And so I trekked 5 miles up the road to the bakery and 5 miles back home every day. And after a couple of months of doing that, I thought, you know, I have a college degree and I'm selling bakery goods, and that's not really what I came for. So I started looking for other opportunities. And then my next job, I actually found in a medical office. So I worked with a medical doctor, and I finally got more into the environment I wanted to be in, kind of more toward the corporate world. And unfortunately, after about 7 or 8 months in that job, that medical doctor made sexual advances. Oh. And when I declined, I suddenly had no job the next day. He didn't say he fired me, but he suddenly had no more money to pay for my position.
That must have been very isolating, getting into this kind of situation in a foreign country.
It was very frightening. Luckily, I had made friends with some people around me, and there was a job opening in a law firm, so I became a legal secretary. And that became my career path, basically. I started as a legal secretary and then moved from there into the corporate world. And you know, and so I still actually work in the corporate world now, financing my writing until it takes off completely.
Well, you know, here, living so close to Tijuana, we're really acquainted with the constant border crossings and the border checks and the crimes of drug and human trafficking. Tell us a little bit about your protagonist. I know she's very different than you. She comes from very humble beginnings. And her flight across the border. How did your experience sort of segue into that story?
So my childhood experiences in Germany were actually a little bit fearful, which some people may not understand coming from a democratic country. But I came from a country that had finished a war. Everything was destroyed. My parents had scars of war victims, so to speak.
Right.
And so even later in the 60s, early 60s, the Soviet Union built a wall segregating one-fourth of Germany from the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. And that border had wired fences and a minefield. And we went there when I was a little child, and I saw the towers with the guards and the machine guns, and it was very frightening to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think because of that internal fear, which I think is very human and very global, I also felt that I could relate to a young Latina woman growing up in a barrio in poverty. I wasn't rich when we grew up. My parents never had a car. We got a TV when I was 11 years old, you know, so.
Yeah, not like today, though.
Yeah, it's not like today. And so I felt that having seen the favelas in Brazil, which is very much like the barrios in Mexico or another country, I felt that I could put myself emotionally and mentally into that place.
And the fear, sort of the universal feeling. Have you spent time in Honduras?
I have actually not been to Honduras. My background in my book is based on research I've done, but I have been to Brazil, and I also went to the interior of Brazil at the border of Argentina and Paraguay, so I have seen some of those third world cities in those places.
Okay, without giving any spoilers, tell us briefly about your protagonist and how she ends up escaping across the border.
So my protagonist's name is Maria Elena Garcia, and I picked that name because Garcia is the most common Spanish Hispanic last name. And so she grows up in a barrio. Her parents don't really support her desire to get a good education and to become sophisticated. As a girl, they feel that she should take care of the siblings, take care of the family. So according to my research, in Honduras, most children need to be in school until they're 15. But at 15, you can leave school and you're done. But in order to get to college and a real good, sophisticated education, you have to do 3 more years of high school. And those 3 years lead to a graduation that's called bachillerato, which is like our bachelor's degree, right, but it's actually a high school degree. Mm-hmm. And so that's what my protagonist wants. And so she fights with her mother. She gets thrown out of the house. She lives on the streets. And luckily she has a great friend who's helping her find jobs, and these jobs afford her to go to school and get that desired degree. And while she's living on the streets, she has a benefactor who helps her protect her, so to speak, living on the streets and living in the city park. And through her friend, who I called Lolita, she actually meets this human trafficker who has a restaurant where Maria Elena ends up working, and her friend works next door, which is a brothel.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yes. And so together they plan to go to the U.S. They save their money, and through this human trafficker.
Yeah, don't tell us anymore. You'll give away the story.
They get to the U.S.
Right. Oh. And I know that that's a universal subject. The human trafficking is of terrible concern, especially here in San Diego. And I also know that the dream for the better life is universal. As you were writing it, was any part of the topic painful?
I didn't find it painful. I think it was more therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of news about Germany, the Syrian immigrants going to Germany, the African immigrants going to France. And as you said, it is absolutely a dream for a better life. I have friends from Asia who came here for a better life. And so I think that's everybody's dream. You know, everybody wants to live in happiness, in peace, and hopefully not in poverty.
Right.
And so we all strive for that. So I think I agree. It's a very global topic.
So in researching your book, what have you learned about, if anything, about the human trafficking problem here in San Diego?
I actually kind of wrote all that by whatever was inside of me. I did not specifically research that topic for my book. But once it came out and I realized that even though to me it was a subtopic, some people felt that that was a main topic of the book. I have actually joined a human trafficking walk in Vista in January. I found out that January is the Human Trafficking Awareness Month in the U.S., which I never knew. And I have heard a lot of news lately about human trafficking and how prevalent it is. I read news that even in Germany, which is, you know, a free democratic country where women are respected, every sixth woman has been assaulted, which was just mind-boggling to me. And I know here in San Diego, in Vista, there are certain pockets where it's really prevalent. So I'm actually learning more about it now than I did when I wrote the book.
You've discovered a passion.
Yes. And I think to me, the main reason for the book, the main topic was the dream for the better life, the path. How do I get there?
And what made you choose 15 for the age of your protagonist? I know this affects young girls.
Right, absolutely. I think the dreams start when you're a teenager and you start forming your dreams for what do I want to do when I'm an adult? People keep asking you, what do you want to be? And so I felt that not only was that a good age group to approach with this topic, there's also an educational element because young kids are so trusting. Mm-hmm. And they may trust somebody who compliments them and gives them jewelry or whatever, and they may not realize that it can lead down a path that they don't want to go.
Or someone who volunteers to assist you across the border.
Exactly.
But there's a price tag on there that you don't understand.
Correct, yes.
Well, I know that you're also an avid traveler. You've traveled extensively through Europe, the U.S., South America. What are the important lessons from traveling that you want to bring to your stories or that you bring to them now and in the future?
I love to travel. I was very fortunate to grow up in Germany, which is surrounded by 9 different countries that speak different languages, and every country has its own culture. So I was spoiled from when I was 3 years old. My grandmother was in Holland, so we went to Holland, we went to Austria, we went to Italy, everywhere. It was fantastic. And then when I got older, I got to visit my family members in Brazil because my great-grandmother had 12 children and took 8 of them to Brazil. So I have a very large family in Brazil. It's actually larger than my German family.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes, and it was great. Some of them I could speak English to, some of them only Spanish and Portuguese, so that was very interesting. But what I've learned is that when you get to know people from a different culture, you open your heart, you become more flexible, you learn compassion and especially gratitude. When you see those favelas or barrios where people live and they have to dig through garbage to find food, it just, you know, how can you not feel compassionate?
Right. Any regrets at all?
Regrets for coming here?
Yeah.
Regrets for writing the story?
No, for immigrants. I don't know, the whole immigration experience.
Oh, I have absolutely no regrets.
Right.
I love it here.
Okay, one last question. I understand that you're writing a sequel to 5 Wishes. Give us a hint of what to look forward to, and might this become a series?
My sequel actually will be called Seaside Daisies. And Maria Elena is still the protagonist. It is her path into her future where she experiences the United States. She gets to know new people that may or may not help her. She still hangs on to her internal fears and anxiety, which I think a lot of immigrants do. So that's part of my own history. And she needs to learn to overcome that and become courageous internally. So that is the path that she's going to go down. And I think my readers will be very happy with the ending.
Do you think it's going to become another book or it will stop there?
I actually don't know. I somewhat write by inspiration.
Uh-huh.
Whatever comes to me. I never planned on a human trafficking story. It just developed.
Right.
And so when I finished the first book, I didn't think there was going to be a sequel. And 2 weeks later, I began writing it. So I really can't foresee it. I just have to open my heart and mind and be receptive to what comes.
To the creative process.
Exactly.
So if you had to give a word of advice to immigrants arriving in San Diego today, what might that advice be?
I would say, don't ever give up.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to end our interview. Our time is up, but thank you, Molly Moon, for joining us.
Thank you, Raina. It was a pleasure.
If you would like more information about Molly Moon and her work, please visit her website at mollymoon.com, and that's M-O-L-L-I-E moon.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Miriam Raftery
and Jean Carpenter,
guest hosting this week's Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes hot events happening in May across our region, from Friday night dinners and concerts in El Cajon to Mother's Day's teas in Julian, America on Main Street in El Cajon, Explore Mission Trails Day, and much, much more.
El Cajon's Friday night dinner and a concert season kicked off May 5th and will continue all summer long from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Prescott Promenade on Main Street in downtown El Cajon. Guests are encouraged to arrive early to dine at a local restaurant or you can bring your picnic and lawn chairs. These concerts are hosted by the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners. You can see the full lineup of bands at downtownelcajon.com.
Seeking to empower women through outdoor activities, REI has launched Forces of Nature, a series of over 1,000 programs for women from May through September nationwide. Locally, the series kicks off with events at Mission Trails Regional Park on May 6th that include rock climbing classes for women and a free inspirational TED Talk-style presentation by outdoor writer Shelby Stanger. She encourages you to come meet other outdoorsy women around a campfire while stargazing with astronomers, enjoying outdoor games, a campfire with a deluxe s'mores bar, and live music. Nationally, REI is telling stories of women adventurers, makers and rule breakers, encouraging women. Allison Wright from REI in San Diego tells women, "Let's make outside the largest level playing field on Earth." For details, you can visit REI.com and click on the More tab, then choose Forces of Nature, or visit the calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
The Alpine Garden Club presents the Waterwise and Butterflies Plant Sale and Festival in Alpine on Saturday, May 6th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Christ the King Episcopal Church in Alpine. Guests will see birds of prey, hummingbirds, shop at vendor booths, and enjoy opportunity drawings plus a silent auction. There will also be a Monarch Mania with butterfly releases at noon, with Monarch host plants for sale at Barron's Market in the Alpine Creek Town Center.
Kids Dance Company presents its spring dance concert titled Ballet My Way at the San Diego Performing Arts Center in the Mission Gorge area of San Diego on May 5th and 6th at 7 p.m. Founding artistic director Spencer John Powell will premiere two new works, In the Land of Qualities, a ballet, a fun new fairy tale inspired by The Book of Qualities by J. Ruth Gendler. Will explore the human qualities within us all, such as fear, power, charm, and joy. The second work will be My Mother's Son, which will include all male dancers from Kids Dance Company and Visionary Dance Theater. Assistant Artistic Director Ramon Montez will present his last new work on Kids Dance Company before leaving San Diego. In addition, a new work called Victory, choreographed by the dancers of Kids Dance Company, will combine hip-hop and ballet. You can reserve tickets at visionarydancetheater.com.
The 27th annual Vintage Alpine event will be held on May 7th from 1 to 4 p.m. This wine experience in the country will take place in the lovely gardens at Summers Past Farms in Flint Springs, hosted by the Alpine Kiwanis Club. Guests will savor premium wines from California and around the world, also sampling the best that local restaurants from across San Diego County have to offer. The event also includes live music and a silent auction. All proceeds will benefit children's causes across our region in partnership with the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This event is for those aged 21 and up. For tickets, you can go to vintagealpine.org.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present its spring concert on May 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. at College Avenue Baptist Church, performing Mozart's Requiem, one of the master's greatest works. In addition, the musical groups will present a salute to Andrew Lloyd Webber, showcasing his unforgettable Broadway musical songs from Phantom of the Opera, Cats, and more. For tickets and details, you can visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
Julian Tea and Cottage Arts will host Mother's Day Teas from Thursday, May 11th through Monday, May 15th. These very special teas include finger sandwiches and savories, scone and tea breads with lemon curd, jam and whipped cream, and dessert. Special menus are available by advance requests for children under 12, vegans, or gluten-free options. There are several serving times to choose from, and reservations are recommended. For information or reservations, you can visit juliantea.com.
The El Cajon Library will host its first Monarch Butterfly Festival in partnership with San Diego Master Gardeners and the Water Conservation Garden Organization on Saturday, May 13th from 1 to 4 p.m. The event will feature crafts for kids, free native milkweed seeds, and informational tables including the Water Conservation Garden and Resource Conservation District. There will also be a presentation on how to create a butterfly garden, live monarch caterpillars, and a program by Ms. Smarty Plants.
Nearly 70 classic vehicles and muscle cars will be on display during the Cool Car Classic on Saturday, May 13th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Heartland Youth Build Campus, located at 5280 Orange Avenue in City Heights. Proceeds benefit the nonprofit Heartland Youth Build, which provides immediate part-time jobs for high school dropouts in low-income communities, while helping them earn their high school diplomas and receive free hands-on training in green building and construction while building affordable homes. For more information, you can visit heartlandyouthbuild.org.
America on Main Street, a family fun celebration honoring the American spirit, will be held in downtown El Cajon on May 20th from noon to 8 p.m. The event includes four stages with live entertainment, a Ferris wheel, petting zoo, hayride, pony rides, kids' games and crafts. This year's entertainment reflects a myriad of cultures in our region. Performers include Chase Avenue Folklorico Dancers, Suzuki Violins, Flying Hills Fame, USA Taekwondo Center, Great Musical Sounds, CYT, Latin Percussion, and Wasan Jarbo Folkloric Dance. For full details, you can visit AmericaOnMainStreet.org.
On May 21st, you're invited to explore Mission Trails Day at Mission Trails Regional Park. This all-day event includes special nature hikes, bird walks, moonlight walk, and a star party. You can also meet birds of prey, visit educational exhibits, enjoy flute music, crafts, face painting, pony rides for children, a climbing wall, and a mini mountain bike track. For a full schedule of events, visit mtrp.org.
The Baja Blues Boys, known for their original acoustic and electric blues plus roots, Americana and party music, will be performing at the Winola Pizza Express just outside of Julian on Friday, May 26th from 6 to 9 p.m. You can find details and directions at winolapizzaexpress.com or get a list of all local appearances by this talented group at bajabluesboys.com.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
10 historic cottages at Warner Springs Ranch Resort have just reopened after the resort's long closure for remodeling under new ownership. An announcement from the resort reads, "As they were in the past, Warner Springs Ranch Resort cottages are meant to provide a simple, rustic setting similar to that experienced in the Old West, a place to create memories that last a lifetime." The resort has also reopened its golf course and horseback riding. The resort also recently formed the nonprofit Warner Springs Ranch Habitat and Cultural Conservancy to protect and manage the property's numerous historic, cultural, and natural assets. The property, which was founded as a working ranch in the mid-1800s and opened as a resort in the 1920s, includes Main Lodge, 250 casita units, golf course and clubhouse, tennis courts, equestrian facilities, restaurants, a spa, campgrounds, three swimming pools, a private airport, and meeting facilities. Beyond the resort, the property also includes a 240-acre public trust cultural preserve. The new owners, Pacific Hospitality Group, also owns other prominent Southern California properties, including Hacienda Hotel in Old Town and the Palm Mountain Resort and Spa in Palm Springs. For information or reservations, you can visit www.warnerspringsranchresort.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This is Cindy Hanna with a public service announcement from CAL FIRE. Being ready for wildfires just got easier thanks to CAL FIRE's new Ready for Wildfire app. This new tool puts a whole library of step-by-step checklists in the palm of your hand. If you're a homeowner, you can track your progress while creating defensible space, hardening your home with fire-resistant construction, assembling an emergency supply kit, and creating a family communication and evacuation plan. With the tap of a finger on your cell phone, you can check off each step and see your progress until you reach 100% ready. The Ready for Wildfire app also provides critical wildfire alerts to protect your safety. You can sign up for customized alerts that will send a text or push notification to your device when a CAL FIRE is responding to a wildfire in your area. Additionally, you can set up alerts for single counties, multiple counties, or statewide. If you travel or enjoy hiking in forested areas, CAL FIRE has that covered too. The app lets you enable an alert system to notify you if a wildfire is reported within 30 miles of your cell phone or other electronic device. Everyone who downloads the Ready for Wildfire app before May 21st will also be entered into a drawing for a chance to win home hardening materials to protect your home from wildfires and flying embers that can travel up to a mile ahead of a fire. To download the Ready for Wildfire app, visit the App Store or the Google Play Store, search for CAL FIRE, and install. For more resources on getting ready for wildfire season, you can also visit readyforwildfire.org or readysandiego.org.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk today about some plants you can plant to bring in hummingbirds. Everybody loves them. Nobody wants to fill those feeders. They get ants in them. They get bees in them. They get mold in them. And someday I'll convince my husband to quit putting sugar water in them and feeding them, because there's enough in my yard to keep every hummingbird in East County quite happy for quite a while. So what do you want to put in your yard that will bring in the hummingbirds? My favorite plant is a cultivar of a native plant. It is called Galvezia firecracker. If you go to most nurseries nowadays, this plant has become so popular that you can get it. Just ask for firecracker, which is different than Russellia. It's a Galvezia, G-A-L-V-E-Z-I-A. This is a plant that gets to be about 4 feet tall, 4 feet wide, and it has red tubular flowers. And that's the key, isn't it? Red tubular flowers. That's what brings in the hummingbirds. They love it. Can't stay away from them. This is a much more manageable and nice plant than the Cape honeysuckle with the big orange flowers and the plant that gets to be 15 feet tall and 20 feet wide and goes everywhere and is a big floppy mess. Try a firecracker and see what you think. You can grow it in the sun, in the shade, in part sun, in part shade, with a lot of water or with just a little bit of water, and it will be fine. I have a neighbor who grows it under pepper trees, and the gardeners come every week and prune them into little round balls, and they never really get to bloom, and those trees have suffered through that for the last few years without a single one of them dying. Now that's what I would call an obliging plant. Another good plant that will bring in lots and lots of wildlife to your garden, and hummingbirds especially, is called California fuchsia. It's called Epilobium. Some of you may have known it in the past as Zauschneria. What a great name. So there's a good password for you, Zauschneria. Who's going to use a word like that for their password? Zauschnerias, or Epilobiums, California fuchsia, are a gray plant, and they have a bright orange-red tubular flower. Once again, great for hummingbirds, really keeps them happy. This is a plant that will actually spread slightly on its own and will get by even if something bad happens to the irrigation and nobody irrigates it for 6 weeks or 6 months. It won't die. It'll be fine. Anytime you go to a nursery, look around and look for the plants that have the red tubular flowers. That's the key to hummingbirds. Now, My friend Maureen Austin, who puts on the Sage and Songbirds Festival every year, says there's two kinds of wildlife-attracting plants out there. There's ice cream cones, which we're talking about now. These are the tubular-shaped flowers that the hummingbirds like. Or there's pizzas, and pizzas are the flat flowers, the daisy-type flowers, that you see butterflies landing on. If you think about butterfly bush, Buddleia, which brings in all sorts of cute little butterflies, it also is fragrant. It's known as summer lilac here, or butterfly bush. Then if you take a close look at those purple spikes that grow on that, that bring in the butterflies, you'll see a whole bunch of little bitty flowers. And that's what the butterflies are landing on. That's what they like. So that's a great one. Probably the best butterfly plant that you can come up with, though, is always going to be the butterfly weed, milkweed, Asclepias curassavica. It has orange and red flowers on it, and it just grows like a weed in your garden. Not invasive, just reseeds very effectively. You will know that you have succeeded when you see interesting looking green caterpillars all over the plant, eating every leaf. In my garden, I pick them off and I move them to another milkweed after they eat all the leaves off one. I don't try to fight them because they're going to turn into monarch butterflies. So my garden is full of monarch butterflies, which I consider to be flying flowers. So keep in mind, butterfly milkweed is a great plant to add to your garden repertoire.
State Route 67 between Ramona and Lakeside is one of the most accident-prone stretches of highway in San Diego County. Hoping to prevent head-on collisions, Caltrans is planning to install flexible posts between Willow Road in Lakeside and Shady Oaks in Ramona at a cost of $7.14 million. But at a March 30th meeting, Ramona Planning Group members pushed for a permanent concrete barrier between Cloudy Moon Drive and Mount Woodson that they believe will better protect public safety. Planning Group Chair Dan Scherer says planners don't believe the pop-up barriers, called channelizers, will be enough to prevent serious crashes. But so far, Caltrans has balked at the idea of a permanent concrete barrier due to issues that include limiting egress and visibility, costs to widen the road, and drainage concerns. Evacuation during a disaster could also be impacted, according to Caltrans. Another option being explored is a high-tension cable down the center median. Caltrans has long talked about widening Highway 67, but now claims it can't find the documents related to that proposal, the Ramona Sentinel reports. So, for now, these plans appear to have fallen by the wayside. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykle, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.